As varied as our topography and soils, as rich as our resources, so varied and rich are the voices and stories of the folks around us. Come neighbor a bit with me, Sam Stroop. Grab a cup of coffee, pull up a comfy chair, let's get to talking.
This is Dave Holman of KPIP Fayette, and this episode of Let's Get to Talkin' will deviate a little in that Sam Stroop will be talking about himself as a farmer. Reflected in this meditative talk is the awareness that farming for him is often a trial, filled with a deep sense of satisfaction as he faces the challenges, frustrations, and triumphs of working the land here in Missouri.
I guess like Ricky Ricardo used to say to Lucille Ball, looks like I've got some splainin' to do. I just couldn't work in an interview this week, so my splainin' is what it's like to be on a farm this time of year. I rented my dad's farm this year, and he's always had a problem with thistles. It goes back, almost 50 years, and he's tried lots of things, mowing, and he brought in some weevils once that were supposed to take care of the problem, and it just never got on top of him. And he's done a great job. He's 93 and holding the farm together, but there's still a thistle problem. So when I rented it, I decided this is the year we're going to get on top of the thistles. I knew they were bad, but I didn't realize just how bad. One day, a friend of mine, Rudy Gingrich, wanted to come look at the trees on the farm to see if there'd ever be any marketable trees there. And I said, well, I'll give you a ride over here, but here's the deal. If I come pick you up and bring you over, he's Amish and doesn't drive, I want three of your boys to come along with shovels, and they and I'll attack thistles while you look at trees. So we got started on one of the hills, and I came to realize just how big a job it was going to be. Kathleen and I hit another hill another day, spent 3 or 4 hours and dug them all up there. I was amazed some spots would be so thick that you could really dig them up pretty fast, especially if they were small. And so I did some calculating, and I was able to do 60 thistles in 9 minutes. So in 1 hour, that'd be like 500 to 600 thistles I was digging up. So we've attacked thousands and thousands of thistles. Yeah, I'm mowing it for hay, and that's getting some that we miss, but mowing just doesn't do it. They come back, and you've got to mow them 2 or 3 times a year to get them to where they don't flower. And then there's the problem of thistles down in the holler and around thorn trees and in the fence rows that you just can't get with a mower, so you got to stick them with a shovel. Well, the other day, I got a phone call on a Friday night from Eno Schwarzentruber and said, I'm coming down that way. Is there anything that me and my roommate, John Hostetler, can do to give you a hand? And I thought, oh man, there's 2 more big patches of thistles. Love to have you help me dig them up. I thought it'd be like 6 to 8 man hours of work. We got going on it, and they each put in 7 hours, and I put in 6 hours. That's 14 hours, and we finished it off. So I can't say we're on top of the thistles yet. We've covered the whole farm and gotten all of them, but I know there'll be some stragglers that we miss, so I've just kind of got to keep an eye on them and attack them with the shovel every so often, check and see if I see any purple ones flowering. Enos and John are both hardworking young men, and the dirt really flew with them with shovels in their hands. They have jobs. It was a job straight from hell. It was a hot day. We downed a couple gallons of ice water. I couldn't have done it alone. I was so thankful they came along. John, all Schwarzentrubers use a lot of tobacco, but John smokes kind of like a chimney. And about 4 or 5 hours into the job, I said, John, don't you need a cigarette break? Haven't you got some cigarettes in your pocket so you can take a break? And then I'll just sit down and watch you smoke for a while. But no, he has a work ethic where when he's working, he doesn't take smoke breaks. So his cigarettes were back in the car, and I didn't get my little break watching him smoke. Well, we finished off the job, And, Enos had just gotten a new car, a used car, and we jumped in it, anxious to head home. I was kind of not watching things careful, and he flew over the top of a terrace in a bad spot, and on the other side of it was a shallow pool of water about 8 inches deep. And so there his car sat right in the middle of it. It couldn't go any further. I jumped out, was going to go get a tractor and chain to pull him out. And as I was running off in the direction of the tractor, I looked back over my shoulder because I heard tires spinning and mud flying. And John had jumped out of the truck or the car, gotten in back and was pushing. He and Enos both have biceps that look like basketballs, and his strength and the front wheel drive on the car got it out of the shallow pond, and I didn't have to go get a tractor. We got home about 5 o'clock, and they wanted to talk. So we sat around the kitchen table and downed a watermelon, and we all got caught up on what's been going on in our lives. And John, I asked him just why he'd left the Amish home he had. And he said when he was 12 years old, he made the decision he was going to leave. And when he was 17, he left and never looked back. I said, "Do you ever feel guilty over that?" And he says, "No." And Enos made a decision to leave. It was a hard one for him. He didn't know which world he wanted to be in, but in March he also left. And so it's a tough life they've chosen. It's a hard life as Amish, but it's a hard life as for all young people in our culture too, and especially for them. They don't have the education that our young folk do. At the same time, they're capable of doing any kind of a job and doing it well. And one thing that's really scary to them is they're kind of afraid of English girls. It's been kind of instilled in them how high the divorce rate is among folk in our culture, and that just really frightens them, that they will get into a relationship and the gal will discover that she's not happy and off she goes. So they left, and I downed some lentils and celery that Kathleen made up for supper, and about 7:30, 8 o'clock, I'd had it and I went to bed. The next morning, I kind of felt like a truck had run over me. So that's one thing that's been keeping me really busy is attacking the thistles on my dad's farm. And I'm ornery. I'm going to get them this year. This is something you have to watch every year because they keep blowing in from here and there. But once you get on top of them, then it's a minor thing to keep that way. Well, the other thing I'm working on is haying. Our goat kid crop this year was not good. I blame it on two things. One was the terrible hay that we had last year. The protein quality just wasn't up to snuff. We had a lot of babies born without hair and premature and quite a few abortions. And a lot of times there'd be one good-sized kid and the other one would be small and it just wouldn't keep up. Then the other thing was our barn was kind of chaotic. We'd never kitted this many babies before, or mamas. And so we had a whole bunch born the second week of kitting, and they kind of got confused as to who belonged to who, and so it was a messy. So I've got two things I'm working on. One is getting a whole lot more quality hay up this year, and expanding the size of the barn so that we can, when they have their babies, throw them in groups of 15 or 20 mamas with their babies, and they won't be in a group of 250 mamas looking for their babies, and I think it'll make all of a difference. We have had regularly a crop of 150% that we're marketing. By that I mean if we have 100 mamas have babies, we marketed 150 babies, so it averaged 1.5 babies per mama. Usually they have twins, but we have so many young mother nannies and they tend to just have one, so that's the way it averages out. This year, instead of 150, it looks like we'll have about 110% crop. Commercial goat meat flocks, that'd be anything over 200 nannies, have a range of 100 to 130%. So we've got some work to do, but I'm optimistic that another year we'll have a better crop, and we are getting a lot of good hay up. I'm anxious to get the first cutting up because it's not as high a quality. It'll run 11 to 12% protein, but our second cutting won't be all seed heads and stems, and it should run 14 to 16%, which is and be a lot less fiber in it. So it'll be a really high quality feed, which is what we want to give them in the last third of their gestation and when they're lactating, having their milk for their babies. It means I need 160 bales of good quality hay this coming year for the goats. And my goal is to put up 400 bales and put them in barns so that if we have another dry year, I've got that to lean on and move ahead. January through April is when we feed hay to the goats. After the rest of the year, they're on pasture. Winter time, if there isn't snow, they're out there grazing fescue plus eating hay. And that grazing is pretty fair protein and very high in vitamin A and really helps them grow and have a healthy crop of babies. We also feed a half to a pound of corn every day to them, and that gives them the energy they need. So I spent April working on equipment. One of my tractors needed a power steering overhaul, and I'd never done that before, but it went well. We got quite a little, I learned a lot from it, and it's working fine. We've got an old baler that has had four bolts come out of one of the sprockets and was acting screwy. So I got those replaced and thought it was working. Went out to try it the other day, and I discovered that one of the airbags that provides tension for the chains had ruptured, apparently. And so that'll be a $600 to $1,000 fix on that. I replaced two of the 10 wheels on our wheel rake, greased and oiled everything, fixed tires, checked bolts. Stayed pretty busy in April just working over equipment. So I've been haying now for about 3 weeks. I've got about 100 bales up. I want 400. We'll get them in barns or covered. And yesterday I was up at 4 o'clock in the morning and did goat chores, and then I went back to bed and slept for an hour, and I was a little lazy over breakfast. I was on a tractor by 9 o'clock. 9 to 12:30 in the morning, I mowed hay. Quit at 12:30 because the mower, one of the discs on it, just flew apart. I discovered that there was four internal bolts that had come loose, and I don't know where they went, but they were gone. Another one of the discs is wobbling, so I've got some major work to do on it. It'll probably be a $200 to $300 fix. We've got three disc mowers. So I unhooked the one and hooked onto another one. It sounds easy, but it was a kind of a slow process, and got it done and went to mowing again. Got mowing about 6 o'clock and worked till 8:45. Seems like I always mow in a light shower. There's a little bit of a rain coming down about 7:30, 8 o'clock. Today I'll mow some more. I'll rake and I'll bale up about 20 bales. Tomorrow I should be able to get about 10 bales, and Sunday I'll get 15 or 20. And so the numbers just keep popping up. About the time I get everything mowed and baled once, it'll be time to turn around and start on that second cutting shortly thereafter. I don't have a lot of money in my haying equipment. It's kind of all old and slow, just like me, but my investment is low. First baler cost me $2,200. I was able to pick up a second newer one at an auction, local auction, for $600. It's a beautiful machine. I haven't had any trouble with it. I've got two tractors. Total value, money I put into them, is $4,500. They're almost as old as me. They were, well, They were built in the early 60s, and I was built in 1948, so I guess they aren't as old as me. But approaching it, I did buy one new mower for $6,000. It was made in Italy. I'm a little suspicious of the workmanship that went into it, but we'll see what happens. I picked up a wheel rake, which really is a fast method of raking, and I got it for $400. Usually they're closer to $3,000 or $4,000. So my total investment in haying equipment is probably less than a tenth of the investment of most folks. But by having the older equipment, I have more repairs and breakdowns. And so that's why I have multiples of every piece of equipment. That way, when one has issues, I can park it, go on to the next, and when a rainy day comes, work on it and get it going again. For me, the name of the game is find an enterprise on the farm that can be profitable. We sold goats last year, live weight, for $3.17 a pound. With calves, if you've got a beef herd, they're running a little earlier in the year for $1.50 a pound, and now they're probably approaching $2 a pound. Sheep run about $2 a pound. I figure for the inputs, the goats are making 2 to 3 times the profitability of what an equal input in the cattle would be. We work at building volume. Right now, this year, we had about 160 nannies that kitted. Next year will be between 225 and 250. I'd love to see if we could handle the 300 to 400. I'd need some help then, however, with kitting and castrating and hoof trimming. Other than that, pasturing is just not that much work. No matter how many you have, it's all about the same. The average after above costs, each nanny should bring in $250 to $300 a year when you have a decent kid crop. So we'll learn a lot this coming year after we've made some changes and see if we can get back up there the numbers that we should have. Goat demand for meat is way up, and the numbers of goats being raised in the United States keeps going down. We're importing half of the goat meat that's used in the United States. It's coming in from Australia and New Zealand. And, you know, it's easy to see why goat numbers are dwindling here in the United States. If you're around and work with the goats, they're quite fragile. You've got to really work at having a good kid crop. Sheep are a lot hardier and just not quite the fragileness. Don't need the quality of feed. Fencing on goats is a real challenge because we try to get our goats to stay on one area of pasture for 5 days before we move them. About the third or fourth day, they just can't take it any longer, and they're going to work really hard to find a way to go under or over or through a fence. And so that's always a real challenge. That's quite a challenge. We made a mistake with some of our fencing and didn't put the fence, woven wire fence, right on the ground. And so that's something we'll have to work over on the time. Worms are a real challenge with goats. They're more susceptible to problems from parasites than any other farm animal. So that's why we rotate the pasture as best we can so that the worms, especially in the summer when it's warm and humid, they pop out of their eggs after about 5 days, 5 to 7 days. So that's why we move the goats all the time, so that they're putting them on fresh pasture that doesn't have the worm load that you get if you leave them on the same spot forever. And about once a year, the goats succeed in finding a way out and coming up on our lawn and devouring all of my wife's rose bushes. That's their favorite food in the world, is roses. Our farm has no multiflora roses left. They clean them up, and when they get a chance, they attack my wife's beautiful and fragrant red roses. They'll eat everything in the garden except the tomatoes. We have a big trellis across the front of the house that we put morning glories on, and they'll almost climb up that trellis to get every last one of those. And you just have to come home and see the sight and just have to say, well, that's what we get when we're goat farmers, because it's going to happen about once a year. So right now I'm really glued to a tractor. It's mow in the morning and early afternoon, and it's rake and bale. When my tractors don't have cabs, I wear ear protection and a nice good hat to shade my face. That when I get off the tractor at night, I feel like a zombie. I'm shot, and every day it's get up and do it all over again. And I've probably got 5 to 6 more weeks of haying ahead of me. And then it's time to build a barn. Our method of barn building, we've got a huge barn now. It's probably about 35 by 120. I just keep adding to it every year. It's not a big expense. My boys, when they were in high school, bought a portable band sawmill. It's quite low maintenance. Doesn't make perfectly dimensional lumber, but it works great for us. I've got a lot of nice oak trees on the farm, and I just go out with my chainsaw and whack them down and haul them up and turn them into 2x6s and 2x4s. And we have a kind of a unique method of the bumpers that you see along the road for protection of going off cliffs or whatever, or narrow shoulders and deep ravines. The State Department, Highway Department, pulls those up every so many years, and then some guy up at Macon buys them, I suppose, for $5 a piece. I go up and buy them from him for 10. They're an I-beam that is 6 inches wide and about 1.5, they're 1.5 inches deep. And so we dig a hole in the ground, 2.5 foot deep, stick those I-beams in it, set them in cement, and then we build off from those with 2x6s, and that's our pole barn uprights, is those I-beams, which are never going to rust. Problem that most pole barns have anymore is the treating they put on wood to make sure it doesn't rot really doesn't work anymore. And so after about 15, 20 years, the poles have rotted off in the ground. And so that's what we're alleviating by building off from these metal I-beams. We're alleviating that rotting. Then I use tin, which I find around, and it's probably a 15th to a 20th of the price of new. Yeah, it's got holes in it, but we're pretty fast at putting plastic cement tar on the holes to cover them up and do a good job, and it keeps it dry inside. And so we can put up a barn pretty cheap, other than the fact that, you know, it's time-consuming. Enos and John said that they'd like to come down several times this summer on weekends and give me a hand with it, but I've got to get the hay out of the way first, and then go to the woods, cut up my wood, and then I'll give Enos and John a call and say, hey, it's time to have a frolic. We're going to be putting up a barn. Come on down and give me a hand. So it'll be a fun time, probably into the fall before we get it done. But again, another way of making this thing work. I'm enjoying the farming. I always have. The days are long. I don't guess I know anything different. I enjoy the challenge of it, the challenge of weather and doing the best you can with the livestock that you choose for your farm. I'm enjoying more than I used to the repairing of equipment, probably because I've got a little more time to do it in, and I'm learning how to attack things better. I am not an organized mechanic. I need to take a couple days and just really organize a shop, and so I'm not always looking around for the tool I need and spending way too much time finding it. So that's something to work on maybe this coming winter. So anyway, enough of this. I think I better just quit talking, and I've done my splaining, and now it's time to go out and jump on a tractor and mow down some more hay. If you enjoyed this session of Let's Get to Talkin', encourage friends out of the range of our low power station to catch us online. Just Google Sam Stroop SoundCloud and the newest and oldest sessions will pop up. If you, like me, have a long day of being focused on my work and life, it's a great day's end to get my mind bent a bit around the life beat of the folks around me. This is Sam Stroop. Catch you next week. Let's get to talkin'.